Katie, MD of Social Chain UK, and welcome to episode 12 of my podcast. I shouldn't say this, but slightly different format this week. So after all of the positive feedback we've had on the previous 11 episodes, what we've decided to do is double down on our efforts and give you as much information as we can in the week based on both my business life and my personal life. So we've split the podcast into two. On a Monday, which is this one, will be my business life focus. And on a Wednesday is my personal life focus. So I just want to say thank you for joining us in our new, brand new episode and new format-ish. The formats are always the same, but this is all centered around my business life. So from the business episodes, what I really want to for you to be able to take away is knowledge, business knowledge, advice on how to tackle issues at work, and also social tips, social media tips of things that we're noticing that's happening in our world. Also a bit about what's happening in the business world. So that'll be each episode of the business podcast. And then the midweek one, which will be the personal one, it's life tips. It's a bit of reassurance that you're not on your own with things like breakups, family matters, life events, and how to tackle them. And yeah, just understand that you're not on your own. And if you're thinking it, I probably will do it too. So yeah, there's two different types of podcasts going out now, which I'm super excited about. Dodds is cracking the whip, but we are getting through them.
No, maybe.
Yeah, no, it's super exciting. I just want to say thank you to you guys for all your feedback and just enabling us to do this, because we absolutely love recording the podcasts. So to be able to do two a week is a dream. So thank you. Each episode is still going to have your admission submission in them, so please keep sending them through on the website, which is www.katieleeson.com. We're getting so many of them in that it enables us to do one each episode, which is perfect, and they're so good as well. We love reading those, so please keep sending them in. So the format of the business episode will be a weekly news roundup, where we talk about brands that might have got it right, might have got it wrong, and anything else that we think is notable in the world of business and marketing. We'll then go into that admission submission, where we'll read yours out and we'll discuss that topic. And then we'll also then go on to do a business lesson, where I'm hoping that you will get out of it some top tips on social media or marketing or audiences and generations. So each week we're going to give you some top insights from our world, which you can take away and use. And then finally, we will do our main admission, which this week is, I shouldn't say this, but don't work too much. So the whole reason why we started this podcast was to make sure that you found it valuable, whether it's like a little bit of a boost or something that you can take away and use. So the purpose of splitting it in two is to ensure that you're still getting as much value out of these podcasts that you can, whether that's for your working life or your personal life. We have split it up to ensure the most value is gained by you guys for the week. So I hope you agree. Please send us your feedback. We're still on 100% five-star reviews. So hopefully splitting it out and doing two episodes a week and generating more information for you will keep those five-star reviews coming.
Perfect. This week, Katie, what's been going on?
This week in the news, there's a few things that are happening. So first things first, have you seen the Amazon robot?
These spook me out a little.
Do they? I think they're cool.
I just think they're a bit scary.
Amazon have now started using, or are going to start using, delivery robots instead of people.
I saw the video, a picture of it like driving around, but like, how do you get it?
I guess you'd have to go pick it up, wouldn't you?
But then how would it know? You are you.
Hmm.
Amazon, have you thought about that?
Yeah. How does it work, Amazon? We're keen to know. So Amazon, in each stage of its company's development, has always been centered around saving us time as consumers. From the very beginning, when you could get your books on delivered straight to your door at a cheaper price without having to leave, tick box number one. Two, when now they've started doing food deliveries, they're taking on the big supermarkets with a 2-hour delivery window, box tick number two. They've also now started doing, alongside their doorbell system Ring, where you don't have to be in and they'll deliver your parcel somewhere at your convenience, which is a great idea, because who likes waiting in for a parcel delivery, man? Because you just never know whether you're going to miss them. Then it gets sent back to the post office. Then you've got the faff of having to go to the post office, which is something that you could have just gone to a store and got what you needed in the first place. So that's a next step. And then also with the Scout robot that just enables consumers to walk out the house, collect the parcel from the walking robot that's going down their sidewalk. So it'd be interesting to see how that rolls out into city centres and also into the UK. But for the moment, they're trialling it in America. And because people's time is so tight and because they're always looking for ways to make their lives a little bit easier, it means also that Amazon can move into any single vertical. I don't think a few years ago we would have thought that Amazon would have gone into the food delivery service, and people were actually a bit sceptical of when they announced it. But what it is doing is it's reacting to lifestyle rather than taking on the supermarkets and going after them as their action. It's really because people are looking for time-saving opportunities, and Amazon recognise that. They recognise what people are doing and how they want to live, and they are finding new ways across any single vertical. Like, they could move into anything with this in mind, because everyone is looking for ways that they can maximise the time that they've got in the day. It's not like me to brag, and I never brag, and this doesn't feel right at all, but I shouldn't say this, but we were right. Not even sometimes, that's me being modest. We do make predictions that come true. So a few weeks ago, we talked about the Instagram egg beating Kendall Jenner. We also predicted that the egg wouldn't last. We were right. Nobody cares about the egg anymore. It did its job. It beat Kendall Jenner. And then since then, it's done some more posts. So 2 weeks after it did the first post, getting 51.5 million likes, which is huge. Second post, 2 weeks later, only did 10 million likes. Still a big number, but a massive drop off. And then the third post, which was about a week after that, about a week ago, only got 7 million likes. So it's safe to say that the egg is cracking.
Wow. She said it.
I said it. I went there. But it just goes to show that something that grabs people's attention in that moment and creates a movement, a trend, only lives for a certain amount of time. So if you're going to get on the back of a trend, do it very quickly. Make it very relevant to what your audience is and what you're trying to say as a brand. Don't do it too late, because people don't care after that trend has disappeared. Okay, so I don't know if you saw a couple of weeks ago, there was a new ad that was published by Gillette, which was a change in format to the way that they were talking about themselves. And last week they came out to say that their sales had no increase on the back of that ad. So the initial sales come back with no increase, but the future sales might increase. Anyone could say that, I suppose.
Yeah.
Our future sales might increase. Why do we think that was? Well, Gillette, it got a lot of attention, got a hell of a lot of attention, which I think is what they were going for, because they've also said that their marketing budget is being cut. So in doing that and doing something where a lot of people were talking about it, they were talking about Gillette. But what they failed to do was set this up correctly. So we've talked many times in the LinkedIn videos and on this podcast about how if you are going to stand for something, you have to live it. And what it's done, what Gillette did, was go from being a brand that put Gillette on a load of women's bottoms to a brand that just jumped on the back of the Me Too movement and tried to become something that it hadn't teed itself up for. People aren't going to buy it, and people are going to talk about it, but not for the right reasons. So if you look at something like, on the flip side of that, last week Lush, the brand Lush, launched their no packaging beauty products. So there was shampoo, bars of conditioner, all without packaging on, all naked. And I think that's perfect. You know where they're coming from. You know that it lives their brand values. And the two match perfectly. And the movement and the noise that it made was because it lived its brand values. Whereas Gillette, the noise that it was making was because it didn't live to the brand values that people associate with Gillette in the past. So it became more like a Pepsi Kendall Jenner ad than it did an actual meaningful Gillette really care about the modern man movement, personally. What do you think, Dodds?
I thought that was very, very well summarised.
Thanks.
But it just seems like a swing and a miss for
completely.
Gillette. Like, they seem like they do need to make people think about feel a certain type of way, which is what they're trying to do. But then, like with Lush, like you said, every single thing that Lush do, like, you don't need to see an ad to know what Lush stand for.
Yeah.
But then Pepsi, who just go single-mindedly, what sells?
Mm.
Oh, women in latex suits with Gillette on their bottoms. Okay, well, we'll do that. And then single-mindedly thinking, well, what sells? Oh, me too. And just jumping on that. But I don't think people are as stupid as Gillette give them credit for.
No, and we know that people now will trust brands with a clear purpose. And this does not have a clear purpose. Gillette don't have a clear purpose. They're two extremes in their messaging from previous to now, and I don't think they teed it up very well. The feedback, according to a survey across 2,000 American adults, was that they viewed the video as favourable, with just 17% having a negative view of the work. But on social, it got a hell of a backlash. A lot of conversation, but a lot of negative conversation. Yeah, I think if you're going to do that as a brand, make sure you've teed yourself up and you are living your brand identity and you've got that set before you go out with such a political, emotional, movement-making ad.
I'm also, like, super suspicious of any survey after, like, a backlash, and then they come back and they're like, well 2,000 people that we asked said it was fine. And then you're like, yeah, because, like, you don't know the circumstances. Or, like, we might not pay you unless you say yes, kind of. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, we're not going to include you in the survey.
Yeah, it depends how non-biased it was. Yeah. If they knew what they were going into and they were getting paid to do that survey.
But, then, like, that just... If you spend any time on social media, you know that's... Those 2,000 people are the minority rather than... Even if they do feel like...
Yeah, it depends the pool of where they got them, like, from, you're right. Completely right.
It's not really a good retort. And then the other retort was, well, the sales haven't decreased, so what's... Like, so it obviously wasn't that bad, but then you would argue all that noise and no increase...
What's the point in doing it? If you're going to spend all that money on an ad and not increase your sales, what's the point?
Yeah, or get all that backlash.
Yeah.
And it not make... Like, it doesn't seem like it's made people... Well, it's made people feel, but it's not made people act either way.
It's made them feel something for a moment, but not enough to make an emotional connection to make you want to go out and buy the brand, is the point, I think.
Yeah. Interesting to see if the future sales...
Yeah, really
interesting. Shavers are long-term buyers, aren't they?
Yeah.
Future sales go up.
But obviously they're under a lot of pressure. The Dollar Shave Club and things like that are hot on their tails. These new startups that actually do stand for something and they're the reason they were founded. And they've got a really good story that people are buying into, whereas big corporation Gillette, it takes a lot more for people to change their perception of that. And I think they're under pressure from rising stars within the... shaver industry. But I would love to know what you think. I'd love to hear your thoughts on whether you thought that the Gillette ad was a good thing or a bad thing, because this is our personal opinion for what we see. So we'd love to know what you think as well. So I think that Gillette had the right intention and it was the right a step in the right direction, but what they didn't do is they didn't get their story straight first before they moved into such a polarizing ad campaign. There is a lot of value in doing things that brands to make people feel something and engage with people and create feelings and movements off the back of a piece of ad content, but there's steps you need to take beforehand. So we think it's a bit of a swing and a miss, as Dodd said. I think they were kind of getting there, but they've just missed the mark slightly. by not setting their stall out beforehand. I think it's a step in the right direction, and I think the messaging is along the right lines of where we want society to be moving to. But in order to do that, I think as a big corporation, you've got to make sure that you're living your brand values before you start putting those messages out. So it's getting there. It's a step in the right direction. But I think it was just a leap too far this time.
Perfect.
Okay.
Straight into the admission submission.
So we have... So we've got an admission submission from the website. I want to say thank you again to everyone that's sending these in. We've got an amazing backlog of these. And if anyone else wants to put their submissions through, it's www.katieleeson.com. This week is a really interesting one. It is, I shouldn't say this, but I want to fire my only member of staff. And the message reads, long story short, I have a small business with one apprentice who has been with me for 6 months. She does some of her work well, but then at times she does some bad. The issue is she doesn't learn from them. I am scared because she knows so much of my business now, and having to lose her would be a big blow. However, I have to check and recheck everything myself, as some of her mistakes could lose business if I didn't. My gut is telling me that the right move is to get rid of her. The problem is I'm a very emotional person and I am learning how to be a boss. I have come so far in the last year, but I think with my heart, and that is the problem. The thought of having to do this is affecting my work and is keeping me up at night. Long term, I do not see her being with my business, especially if I want to grow. This is a very interesting point and something that we have talked about previously in previous podcasts, and the difference between making decisions that are going to make you popular and making decisions that are right for your business. And for me, what I have to say in this scenario is go with your gut. If it's holding you back and it's holding your business development back, one, it's not good for her because she's not learning, and two, it's not helping you because you're not learning and growing, and your gut is always right. So whenever I get people in for interview, if I have something in my gut that I don't feel is correct, I don't see them again. Or if there's something happening in the business where my gut is telling me that there's something underlying going on, my gut is usually right. And they joke about that in the office, that if I've got a gut instinct, then it's 9 times out of 10 it's right, which is a bit odd, isn't it? Yeah. But you do know that, don't you, that your gut instinct is something that you you should really listen to a lot more. So if it's affecting your business, and but you feel like you're going to feel like a bad person by making this decision, I just think of her. I don't think if she's making lots of mistakes and she's recognizing that she's making the mistakes, or she understands that she's making mistakes, but she isn't learning from them, then it's not going to benefit her as an apprentice and in her career. In the first instance, she might be absolutely devastated and you might feel awful, but it's kind of like she needs to learn and develop, and she needs to find her own path, and you can't keep covering up and changing and checking her work, because it's just going to take up your time. As a business leader, your time is so precious and you've got so much to do that you need a team that you can rely on. So my advice would be, if you can, get another apprentice in just for a short period of time, whereby they can start picking up bits of work and you feel comfortable that you're not going to have to do everything when you let the other apprentice go. I think going in through the deep end and just getting rid of someone when you don't have a backup plan in place is dangerous. But I think if you can look to find another apprentice, if you can hire them, even if it's for a month or a couple of weeks, where they can start taking on the workload and you feel confident and comfortable, it'll work out so much better. So I think for both of you in this scenario, it's make a change and it'll make a big difference to your company and also to her development in the future. So we used to do a LinkedIn video called the Social Roundup every week. And what we found was we were getting loads of positive comments about it on LinkedIn. And what we thought was, now that we're doing these business versions of the podcast and the personal versions of the podcast, that we would bring the social roundup into the business version of the podcast, so you guys can take some learnings away from what we're doing and how we're finding things and changes that we're noticing on social. So The social roundup for this week is, you may or may not have noticed, if you are a marketer, that organic reach on Facebook has been falling ever since the algorithmic changes in January last year. That has meant it's incredibly difficult for organic content and business as usual content to get the reach that it once previously did. How do you maximize your activity on Facebook? We did a video the other week about how Facebook, we think that it's losing a bit of its value, but there is still value in using it in the right way. And what we want to talk about is how to spend less and reach more using Facebook. So if you are frustrated with a fall in organic reach on Facebook, there are ways that we can help you, and there's tips that we're going to give you in terms of organic, but also in terms of paid, in how to maximize your use of Facebook. So here we go. So there are three key things that you need to know on how to maximize your Facebook activity. First one is audience planning. If you are using your content, clicking the boost button, spending £5-10 on boosting it without really thinking about where it goes and what it does, you might as well just flush that money down the toilet. What we recommend, with as with any sort of media planning, is that you think of your audience first. Think of who you're trying to target, think of who you want to put your messaging to, and then also create different ads for each audience type that you want to reach. Because me and Dodds might be in the same audience bracket, but what we like and who, what we don't like and what we're going to engage with and what we're going to react to will be very different. So if you know what your audience like and you also know what's working well on the Facebook platform in terms of engaging content, which you should spend a little bit of time looking at, you can then create content that you know your audience will enjoy. In doing that, you might be able to save a bit of money on your paid ads because it might boost its organic reach. So it's something to consider and something to take a little step back with. Understand your audience, understand what is engaging that audience to create content that delivers results. You can put an ad in front of me and you can pay a fortune to reach hundreds of thousands of people, but you can't make them watch it. It has to be engaging to grab their attention. So you can save money by creating engaging content because it can have a higher organic reach, but also it'll maximize the money that you're spending on your paid because you know that people are actively engaging with that content. So my main tips there to create engaging content is use video. Post between 9 p.m. and 11 p.m. and make sure you're using less than 50 characters in your caption. Those are my main tips for creating engaging content in this short period of time. Finally now, so you know your audience, you know what's going to engage them, make sure you're using a clever paid strategy. You need to create an engagement funnel. Blanket boosting is not the thing you need to do here. You need to create an engagement funnel that you know that when people are already engaging with your content, how to retarget them. Video is especially useful for this purpose. So you've created your initial connection with your consumers. The next thing is to optimize your post until it reaches a certain threshold. We see that to be between 2,000 to 3,000 video views. What you do then is you create a conversion campaign that targets people that have watched 25%, at least 25% of your video, because you know that they're engaging with your brand. You can then retarget them with messages to push them along the conversion funnel. We do it very well here. We use live streams to create a data pool. So we have an hour's live stream where we get people to comment. And in that time, along the hour, we then collect all of the data of the people that commented and use that, create audience pools whereby we then retarget those audiences with brand messages and product messages to push them down further down the sales funnel. So finally, on to my main admission for the week. This week it is, I shouldn't say this, but don't work too much. That's at you, Dodds.
Yeah, okay, well, should I just stop now?
Please don't stop now. Let's just finish this podcast because people really might find this useful.
A really
useful.
Good ending of the podcast. We just stopped immediately.
Don't worry too much. Okay, bye.
Tune in next week. Bye.
This has come because if you didn't know and you don't know much about me, I get migraines. And my migraines come on when I stress, when I'm stressed and when I try and do too much. So I went a long time getting migraines. I was getting migraines daily. Didn't know why, couldn't understand it, but it was absolutely debilitating. Couldn't cope with work, just felt drained, felt like I had no life because all I was doing was getting up, going to work, getting a migraine, having to go home, get into bed, go to sleep. The cycle continued. It was very stressful, which probably added to the stress that I was feeling anyway. Went to the doctor. They put me on a load of different medication, pain relief, things to kind of stop the migraine when it started rather than prevent it from happening. And I ended up going seeing a neurologist. So at first they thought that it might have been linked to me having a little stroke.
What's a neurologist?
It's for your brain.
Oh, right.
So at first they sent me to go and get a heart scan.
Blimey.
So I went and had an echocardiogram, which checked whether my heart was working in the right way, which thankfully it was. So it wasn't that was causing any problems, because sometimes...
What were you thinking at that point? Like, blimey, these...
Yeah, it was serious.
Migraines be the end of you.
It was really serious, but also I just knew that something wasn't right and I needed to fix it. I just got so fed up. I was so drained. I just knew that I needed answers. It was terrifying, but it was really good to see your heart on the camera. I was like, whoa, my heart is there and it's working. So I went to a heart scan. They said there was nothing wrong there. The next point of call was going to see a neurologist, which is your brain doctor. They did some tests on me to see whether I had had a stroke. I hadn't. And he deduced that it wasn't anything physical. So the reason that I was getting migraines was mental, which the only thing that I could link it back to was work.
Because that's literally all that was going on.
All that was going on, really, yeah. Yeah. And to be honest, when I have personal upset, it's very rare that I get migraines. So I can be going through something like a breakup or dad's heart attack or, God, a grandparent passing away. I don't get the migraines. It's work stress. I think it's the pressure that I put on myself that then leads to them. And also, what also I think I've found is it's the way I'm sat at my desk. It's my posture.
All right.
So your neck and the top of your neck, if that gets really tense and tight because of stress and because the way you're sat, it can cause migraines, which is an interesting concept, which is also why you shouldn't work too much, because you're sat in the same position all the time. The worst possible moment, I think, and the way that it's affected me most, is sometimes it used to come on when I was driving and I get things in front of my eyes when they start, so I can't see, my vision gets blurry and it's terrifying. And the worst time was when I was on the motorway and I started getting the vision change in my eye. I did not know what to do.
That's awful.
It was
awful. Also, the last time I'll get in the car with you.
It's all right, I've mastered them now. But it is terrifying and... you don't have a clue.
That was scary.
It was really scary. Because you're going at 70 miles an hour on the motorway and your vision starts to get really blurry. What can you do? What do you do in that situation? So I knew that I really needed to solve this problem. It wasn't physical. It was mental. There was nothing a doctor could do to sort of fix me by having an operation or anything like that. So I went back to the doctors and they put me on a type of medication that's meant to prevent migraines, but it's also an antidepressant. And I was meant to take those every single night, 2 tablets a night before I went to sleep. The thing is, though, they absolutely wiped me out. So I'd be there taking these tablets, and they did help because they got me out of the cycle of having migraines all the time. But what they didn't help with was the fact that I felt groggy all the time in the next day, because I'd take these tablets, I'd have them, I'd go to bed, I'd wake up, but the tablets were still having an effect on me and I felt sluggish, tired. I didn't feel at my best. So I knew that wasn't a long-term solution.
That sounds exactly the same, just in a cycle.
Yeah, it is a cycle. It's just a constant cycle of then trying to manage not getting a migraine. It's mental. So the big thing that I learned to do was not work so hard, not work so much. So yes, I work incredibly hard and I put a lot into what I do at Social Chain. Also what I do outside of Social Chain, I still go out to events, I still work with charities, I still do a lot of stuff, including this podcast and the output that we get from it. I'm sure you can see that we work really hard. But what I've stopped doing is, what I've learned to do is understand my body better and know when I need to stop.
I think it's an interesting point because everything that you kind of see in terms of the success is always linked to working yourself into the ground every single day.
Yeah.
So I think it's almost refreshing and also good news for everybody.
Yeah.
That you don't need to work, put yourself into an early grave to be successful. You're more productive than you were when you had your migraines.
There's a huge thing, isn't there, about like the hustle culture and the fact that you, to be able to be seen as successful, you need to be looking like you're working every hour and putting everything into that.
And then you're looking at everybody else who's
and,
like,
yeah, and it's like you feel like you should be doing it too, and you feel like if you're not doing it, you're not successful.
But then, oh, I don't know if you can hear it, there's a police car or something.
Because you do work long hours, don't you?
Yeah, it's like super difficult because when I go home and I'm doing work, it's just like the same as I'm watching telly, really. I'm not like, it's really, really difficult. But, because I don't see it as work, that's why I think it's difficult. But I have cut myself off. Like, I cut myself off at a certain point now, at like a certain time. Because I know if I don't go to bed now, I know that I'm going to only get this much amount of sleep because I need to get up in the morning. And I know if I get any less than this, then like tomorrow's going to be a write-off. So the extra bit of work I do tonight is redundant because I'm going to be behind tomorrow, if that makes sense. So but that's like a new thing. I've only started doing that recently.
How do you feel since doing it?
It's more about that I feel more assuring myself that it's okay not to do work. So like when I go home from here, my head's fried. So I sit and I watch something on Netflix. It's usually like Mock the Week, although I have started getting into this really, I'll tell you about it after, but it's a really good documentary. And I'm like, okay, we've not doing anything. Whereas before I would have seen it as like a sign of weakness, or almost like I'd have been worried that like, oh my God, I'm not doing something. I used to have this thing about my competition, whereas like there's always somebody working, like while I'm asleep they're working, or while I'm eating they're working. So I used to be like, I would drive myself insane basically, being like I couldn't stop.
Yeah.
But now just being a bit more self-assured that it's okay for me to, and like I still work quite a bit, so
yeah,
but it's just
really
taking that little bit off.
Do you think it's improved your output? Have you not noticed yet?
Well, I'm just better during the days. Like, I'm more switched on.
Yeah.
And then what I was doing before was, like, was creative, but it was, like, almost on autopilot. Mm-hmm. So it's when I was doing the vlog. So I was just, like, film, edit, film, edit, film, edit. And it was, just like... But whereas now I'm, like, coming up with better ideas.
Yeah.
Because my brain's a bit more switched on or whatever. Yeah. So I can, like... So I think the output's better.
That's exactly,
and then my standards are a bit higher.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel about it, that I know that I'm going to be better in my job and I'm going to be better for Social Chain if, one, I'm not absolutely shattered, because I know that I'm not very good when I'm tired and I make decisions that I probably shouldn't, that probably aren't the smartest. And then, two, that I know that if I am on form and I'm not having a migraine, everyone benefits, because it wipes me out of the business for longer than it would have done just stopping when I felt like I should stop, rather than pushing it too far. The other thing with it is, and we do this really well here, is stopping and smelling the roses. So if you're constantly pushing that hustle vibe and you're constantly working every hour God sends, when do you stop and take stock and celebrate what you've succeeded in and the successes you've made, but also how do you learn from stuff that didn't go so well? If you're constantly
like reflection,
yeah. If you're constantly on a cycle of pushing and pushing and pushing just to do the do, when do you then stop and
point?
Strategize?
Yeah. I think there's like, you could, not to like stop celebrate and never start going. Like, there's like a fine line, I think, probably.
Yeah, there is
but
a fine line.
I do think you should just like we do, reflect at the end of the week on just like all the small little victories that we've had, or even like the bigger victories. Mm. But then,
but also the learnings, also the things that didn't go so well. So the thing that I'm doing more of this year is not doing as much reactive work. I'm doing more proactive work. So I'm thinking about things that we're doing well, things we can be doing better. But in order to do that, I need the time in the day to step back and watch as a bit more of a helicopter view. So then I can make decisions and changes and help everyone else in the business for us to be better.
Taking your time. So everyone, I guess, is just rushing to the finish line, aren't they?
Yeah.
But also, I think it's quite refreshing. This is in the last episode of the podcast that went out last week, that we were like, you're saying, sorry, that and what we're saying here is that you don't have to work all the time into the ground every day. Like, that's what a lot of people say. And you always compare yourself to people who are like posting all the time. But then you're like, last week you were saying how I go home and I watch Les Mis.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely fine. Yeah. Like, that's okay. You need that downtime, like you say, to reflect and go ahead. And like, that's almost reassuring for people who think, oh God, I've got to be working all the time. And
completely.
It's like, it's actually, you can watch whatever watching Les Mis.
Well, you know from the very first episode that if you're concentrating on things so hard, you can never come up with the best idea. Mm. So the name of this podcast actually came out of, we were trying to think of it, we couldn't think of it, we were racking our brains.
And for then we days.
For days and days. And we stopped. And I went for a wee. And the idea came to me. Yeah, I reflected in that moment. But the idea came to me in that minute. And I think there's a lot to be said about your brain and how it works, and how your subconscious brain needs the time to work. When your conscious brain is constantly going, it stops your subconscious brain from coming forward with the idea. So you need to sort of have that time out moment of either meditation or just moving away from what you're doing in order to have better ideas and be more creative. So there's a couple of tips that I think that I live by now. One is exercise and making sure you're getting the exercise in. I don't exercise to lose weight. I exercise to help my mind, and I know that my migraines are much better after I exercise, and if I'm putting stuff in and I'm sort of making myself really super tired. Because I think the thing in the day is, you sat at your desk all day, you're mentally tired, but you physically, your body isn't as tired. So you need to make sure you're pushing your body as well, so you have a really good solid night's sleep. So I exercise. Last week I was very good. I went to the gym on Wednesday. I'd booked onto a spin class, but I was actually a bit late to get there. But I still went in and I still did a 5K run.
That's good.
So I'm going to try and do that more. And I'm going to try and build up my 5K time while, if I can't get to a class. So I've got no excuses, really. And then the other thing alongside that, so you exercise to help you sleep, but sleep is so important, so important. And everybody needs between 6 to 8 hours a night. And people who tell you that they don't, it's not true. They might think that they don't, but actually they do. So the Joe Rogan sleep podcast, which they got a sleep expert on, and it's a couple of hours long, but it's absolutely fascinating. And the couple of things that I really took from it is, one, that everybody needs a certain amount of sleep. And two, which is something that Dodds and I have talked about, the fact that we used to like not sleep as much in the week and try and catch up the sleep on the weekend.
I think everyone does that.
It's like a sleep
bank. Everyone's like, it's okay, I'll just sleep in at the weekend. And then it really flipped my top when I was like, when they explained that that's not how, terrible phrase, but then when they realised that that's not how it works.
It doesn't work.
It's like the guy was explaining that your body needs REM sleep, which is the deep, like, he went into a bit more detail. I'm no way an expert, but he basically said you needed X amount of that really, really, really deep sleep, and you can't just get that at the weekend. You need that during the week. So it's not really the IOU system that I think everyone, as far as I'm aware, lives by it.
Yeah,
is like, that's not how it works at all. And then you mentioned earlier about the people who say that they need less than seven to eight hours sleep. He said we got the stat here that they said that it had a particular name, but he said there is only 1-3% of people in the world that could survive over a long period of time on just less than 5 hours sleep. So I think we all probably know people who think that they can, but the chances of them, of you knowing all those, that 1-3% is, or if you're one of those people yourself, which I was, again, like last year, because I was living off less than that, and I was like, I'm totally fine.
It's crazy.
Whereas I was like, I'm definitely, the chances of me being in that 1-3% are quite slim.
It's crazy. And there's also a lot of medical evidence now that is, if you don't get enough sleep, it can lead to Alzheimer's. So
yeah, it's like,
please look after yourself and sleep. And that is one of the reasons why at Social Chain we have the flexible working policy, and we allow people to work how and where they work, they feel like they can best that day. So we do have sleeping pods, so if someone feels like they need a nap, they can go. But also it just means that we know that people work best when they are rested, and we get the most out of people when they feel like they are on top form. So the flexible working thing is super important. And I've noticed actually last week that it's nice to see in the news that Publicis, the agency group, have also introduced flexible working across the whole of their company to allow for the way that people now need to work every day, which is great to see that other people are following in our footsteps. Sleep is super important. Not working so hard is super important. Getting the exercise in that you need just to help your mind recover is the thing that really helps me with my migraine. And my final thing just to say is that there's more to life than work. I know that I am much more productive and creative in my job when I spend time doing other things that aren't work related, whether that's with my family or my friends or reading books or watching documentaries and films and TV programs that sometimes are rubbish. But it just means that I come into work invigorated, and that I think is best for everybody. So I just want to say thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Please comment and share and rate us, because we are still 100% 5 stars and we would like to keep it that way. And leave your admission submissions on the website, which is www.katieleeson.com. We would also love to hear your feedback on these new formats, so the Business Monday and the Personal Midweek. So your feedback, obviously, it shapes the way that we put these podcasts out, because like in the Facebook advice that I was giving earlier, we listen to our audience and we understand our audience before we create content. So we do everything with you guys in mind. If you feel like you want to change something, or if you've got any suggestions, we would more than love to hear them. So please get in touch and tell us what you think. Thank you so much, and we will see you next week.